This is In Ear Insights, the Trust Insights podcast. AI Academy for Marketers is an online education platform designed to help marketers like you understand, pilot, and scale artificial intelligence. The AI Academy features deep dive certification courses of 3 to 5 hours, along with dozens of short courses, 30 to 60 minutes each, taught by leading AI and marketing experts. Join Katie Robert, CEO of Trust Insights, and me, Christopher Penn, Chief Data Scientist of Trust Insights, for 3 of our courses in the Academy. 5 use cases of AI for content marketing, intelligent attribution modeling for marketing, and detecting and mitigating bias in marketing AI. The Academy is designed for manager-level and above marketers and largely caters to non-technical audiences, meaning you don't need a programming background or a background in data science to understand and apply what you learn. One registration gives you unlimited access to all the courses, an invitation to a members-only Slack instance, and access to new courses every quarter. Join now and save $100 off registration when you go to trustinsights.ai/AI Academy and use registration code PEN100 today. That's trustinsights.ai/AI Academy and use registration code PEN100 today. In this week's In-Ear Insights, sometimes things go sideways. Sometimes things don't work out the way we expected them to. I was working on a large data analysis of Reddit data last week, and there's a certain point where, like, you know what? Not only is this not yielding good results, it's not yielding much of anything except junk. And so the question I asked myself, and the question I want to ask you, Katie, is at what point do we throw it all away? At what point should we be willing to say, you know what? We're throwing good money after bad. We're throwing good time after bad. Let's can it versus let's try and salvage it. How do you balance it? How do you make that judgment call when you're running a project, particularly one that's a big investment where a lot of eyes are on what you're doing?
So, you know, easy questions on a Monday morning. Got it. it's a tough call. And it's usually, in my experience, it's never been a decision that's made lightly. And it's never been a decision that's made solely by one person. And so the project manager may be the person responsible for moving things forward, but the project manager is rarely solely responsible for making big business decisions, especially when they involve money. And so, you know, it really depends. It depends on how much we're talking in terms of a sunk cost. It depends on whether or not you actually set that money aside for research and development, and then it's not really a sunk cost. It depends on, you know, how well planned out the project was and if there's an opportunity to salvage it. And so, you know, if we're going down the road of, you know, it's a small, you know, project and, you know, it's only maybe a few thousand dollars, which is still a lot of money, especially to a small business. You know, you may just have to say, this thing didn't work out. We experimented. The thing that you salvage from there is you take your lessons learned of what didn't work. What didn't we do this time around that we should do moving forward? Maybe it's, you know, our hypothesis for the research wasn't really that strong, or we just kind of started like digging around to see what we would find. That's almost always going to end up as a sunk cost, because if you're not thinking about what you're going after, if you're just sort of like, I don't know, maybe this might work, maybe this over here might work, you are likely always going to have some kind of a sunk cost, and that's what you want to avoid. And so, unsurprisingly, it always comes back to how much of it have you planned out ahead of time. Now, the planning process itself can be a sunk cost, because you could go down the road of, you know, planning requirements and starting to do the data gathering and then find out that there's nothing there. But generally speaking, that planning costs a lot less than actually having a data scientist or an engineer or someone start to do the digging through the data itself.
I feel like in this particular example we're using, I think we did go about this backwards in the sense of we came up with a hypothesis and the plan first before doing the exploratory data analysis. And then as we got into the exploration, we realized there's not anything here. Right? There's nothing in this pile of stuff. It's all chaff, no wheat, which I guess can be challenging because
you also don't want to have your, you know, a data scientist, you know, at, you know, how $500 an hour or whatever, just digging around data for, you know, without a clear goal in mind either. So how do we balance the two? How do we balance, like, okay, we should do the exploration to see if there's a there before coming up with a hypothesis, or we have a plan and then we start to execute the plan and find out the plan, it goes off the rails very, you know, fairly soon on. How do you balance those two scenarios?
So that's where a lot of like proof of concepts and beta tests and those sort of experiments come about. Very rarely is proof of concept or a beta test just sort of like a, I don't know, let's just see what we want to get. There's still a level of planning involved. And so, you know, we spent, you know, 30 minutes, maybe an hour over the past couple of weeks, sort of sketching out the outline, putting together a plan for this research project that we wanted to do. And then you spent a little bit of time digging around the data to find out, is there something there? And so we haven't gone so far down the road as we've fully committed to, this is the data that we have to use. This is the structure of the paper. We've been promoting it. Like, our sunk costs are very minimal because we were essentially working as if this, your initial data exploration, was a proof of concept. So I wouldn't say we did it backwards. We actually did it the way that it's supposed to happen, because you need to find out, am I going to get the kind of output that I'm after? And so when we talked earlier this morning about, here's what I'm finding, we were able to start to pivot the plan to say, what if we did this instead? So the data is salvageable and still usable. We're just going to use it in a slightly different context, you know, and we're in a fortunate position where we own the company and we can do that. We can decide to change, you know, the research, we can change the hypothesis, we can change, you know, the topic of the paper. Not all marketers are in that situation. And so they are scrambling to figure out, well, I've already pitched out this concept to all of these other customers and, you know, articles and whatever, and now I have to stick with it. And that's where you start to get into trouble, is when you start to put the horse, the cart in front of the horse.
Yes.
I don't know how horses and carts work, but I know that one of them does not belong in front of the other.
Well, I mean, that brings up a really good point, because we've also had an experience with a client project where there was a very good plan. There was a survey plan that was rolled out. The survey got done differently, and then you ended up with something that, you know, that train had left the station, but it was filled with manure instead of gold. And now, you know, in this particular instance, the train is still full of manure, and it is probably not going to be successful. So should every company, should every organization have an R&D department that's working on this sort of thing, so that you're doing those rapid proofs of concepts all the time, and that you're not ever left holding the bag of, well, what do we do with this thing, as opposed to being a situation where we've invested $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever in this thing, and only when you're 60% of the way through the project you realize, wow, this thing is not going to go anywhere, and we basically burned $250,000 for no reason.
They absolutely should, and that's what falls into some of the agile methodology, is sort of those 2-week iterative sprints. You're constantly building and iterating and coming up, you know, at the end of 2 weeks, you should have some sort of a proof of concept that you can demonstrate to the rest of the team and stakeholders. They don't, you know, it should be something tangible. It shouldn't just be a theoretical, you know, for the past 2 weeks, we've been building a bunch of code and you can see it in 6 months. You need to have something that, you know, I, as a non-developer, should be able to at least look at and go, okay, that kind of looks like the thing that we were talking about, you know, keep moving down this road, or that's not what we asked for, we need to change it. And that way you're not investing millions and millions of dollars. You've only sunk about 2 weeks worth of work to then pivot. And you're still at that early point where you can continue to pivot. And then 2 weeks later, you're just building on top of the thing in a small iterative way. And that's exactly what agile methodology is meant to do. And so a lot of development teams, you know, ones that I've managed in the past, have always fought for and pushed for that R&D time so that they can do that experimentation. It's difficult to build into your budget because it is going to be likely sunk cost. You know, not all of the, you know, research that, you know, we do with data or we do with code is going to pan out to be anything, to your point initially, Chris. But there needs to be some sort of a structure around it of like, what am I researching? Am I researching if the new shiny, you know, plugin on top of RStudio does a better version of generating a chart than Tableau? That's a useful thing. And we might find out that no, it doesn't, or yes, it does. Like, then at least you can say at the end of, you know, your 2-week sprint, I found out that I got pretty close and I just need a little more time, or this isn't going to do what I ever want it to do. So I need to abandon it and move on. And I won't keep wondering like, well, what if I just spent more time? What if I just did this? You've already done the proof of concept. And so I do think that it makes sense for companies to build it in, but there needs to be structure around it. And there needs to be guidelines and guardrails, even though R&D feels like it should sort of be like a playground. It should, but it should have a fence around it.
Yes, don't let your scientific toddlers run around unguarded. In that context, though, so there's two things that I think are really worth pointing out. One, when I look at the like amount of code and research and stuff that we do as an organization, I would say 95% of the research we do never sees the light of day. Like it just kind of sits in a folder, and pieces of it definitely do get reused for other projects. Like I was working on this one thing where building a recommendation engine, and the prototype was a miserable failure. Version 2 was a moderate failure. Version 3 is only slightly a failure. But all of those will never see the light of day. So I think it probably is worth pointing out to folks that, yeah, there is going to be a sizable amount of sunk cost in research. And the second thing is, what if you're an organization? Because we obviously have many clients, and we know many folks like this, like in our Analytics for Marketers community, which if you haven't joined, go to trustinsights.ai/analytics for marketers, free Slack group with over 1,200 marketers talking about stuff like this. And a lot of the organizations don't have an R&D department. Or if they do, it's in product and it's not in marketing. For the marketers out there, what do we do? What do they do if they don't have, someone like me who's just messing around on a Saturday night with stuff for fun?
Well, before I get into that, let me step back, because you had mentioned your recommendation engine version 1, version 2, version 3. My question to you is, did you learn something between each version?
Oh, definitely. I learned how not to make a recommendation engine.
But yes, to me, that means that it's not completely a sunk cost, because you were able to learn new skills and figure out new techniques. And that, so that in and of itself makes it valuable, because then you can take that and apply it forward. And so, yes, version 1 shit the bed. Version 2 kind of crapped out. Version 3, it kind of puttered along. Got incrementally better each time. And so I think that's one of the things that, companies, if they're like, oh, well, if I'm not going to get anything useful out of this, then I'm not going to do it. The usefulness needs to be in proper context. So you might not have like a widget or a thing at the end of it, but your team is likely going to feel a little bit more fulfilled because they had a little bit more freedom to mess around. They're going to learn some new things that they might not have had a chance to learn if they keep doing things the exact same way every single time, because this is how we've always done it. So I just want to I wanted to point that piece of it out too, because I think it's important as companies are thinking about, what am I getting out of letting my team do this kind of research and development and experimentation? Well, you're getting a team that, is being more creative, is being more, using their critical thinking skills to do that problem solving and really sort of thinking outside of those, boundaries of this is how we've always done it. Now, to your question about, usually R&D lives within product, not within marketing. Don't try to do it all at once. We say that with a lot of like AI projects, for example. AI is one of those things that, marketers are trying to experiment with. Find a very small use case and do a small proof of concept, something that, you could probably back of the envelope figure out how much it's likely going to cost in resource time, in your time, in budget, and just sort of work in a small way and start to scale it up once you've been able to prove out whatever the thing is. if you don't have proper research and development, then you need to just make, like, you need to keep it small and contained, and you need to be transparent about the thing that you're doing. Hey, I thought that we might experiment with this other way of doing something, so I'll do it this way too, but I might also try it this way just to sort of do sort of like an A/B test. And we talked about that a little bit last week when we were evaluating MarTech stacks too.
Okay. Yeah, it makes total sense. I would also say that it's probably not a bad idea to be a part of an analytics community or a marketing community. So you can, if you, even if you don't have R&D of your own, at least be listening to what other people are doing, asking them what they're doing, and seeing if there are any lessons they've learned that you can import into your organization, even if you don't have those capabilities yourself. You know, if you hear somebody like saying, I ran an A/B test, you know, with Google Optimize, and I got no usable results out of it. Like, good, that's something that it broadens your knowledge to know, oh, yeah, if I don't have a good testing plan up front, then I'm going to test a bunch of things that don't matter and end up with inconclusive results.
I think that's a really, really good pro tip for people is, you know, join a community and say, what were your lessons learned from doing this thing? And that way you can sort of go into it saying, okay, this person didn't put a plan together. Let me at least put a plan together and then see how far I can get. I think that that's such a smart, you know, sort of, what do they call it? Like the hive mind or crowdsourcing, yep. Like asking people, what did you do in this situation?
Yep. So to wrap up, when it comes to figuring out where something is a sunk cost and when to bail out, ideally it's sooner rather than later. If you structure your plan to accommodate for things like exploratory data analysis and things up front, you will hopefully reduce the amount of sunk costs. And to Katie's point, even if something is a sunk cost, there may be salvageable lessons or pieces of code or analysis that you can reuse for a more successful project later. If you've got questions about this or any other topic about analytics, join our free Slack community. Go to trustinsights.ai/analyticsformarketers and join over 1,200 other marketers talking about things just like this. And while you're at it, go to the Trust Insights website, again, trustinsights.ai, and sign up for our newsletter where you can learn about this and get fresh data every week. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Want help solving your company's data, analytics, and digital marketing problems? Visit trustinsights.ai today and let us know how we can help you.